The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Time now for the second hour of the Jimmy Sangenberger Show here on News Talk 710 KNUS. Good to be with you on the program this morning, 303-696-1971. Our telephone number if you want to join in to the festivities. Text into the show on the 710 KNUS app on your smartphone as well. Name and town, please, if you wish to chime in. And we will get to some more texts and phone calls coming up in just a little bit after our guest, who I will introduce momentarily. But I want to play a clip. Yesterday, Nine News did a story, which includes our guest, Mike Eaton, the former chief of safety for Denver Public Schools. And this is a part, just to kind of tease in a little bit, where they specifically talk about school resource officers on schools and the extent to which they are proven out as being effective. Take a little bit of a listen to this.
Several national studies, however, looked at historical cases and determined SROs do not equal a deterrent. This study from the University of Albany and the research group called RAND found that between 2014 and 2018, SROs effectively reduced some violence in schools, but not gun-related incidents. And this study from a couple of universities in St. Paul, Minnesota, looked at school shootings from 1980 to 2019 and found no connection between an armed officer and a deterrence of violence.
We look at other options. We continue to challenge the process and look at other school safety options, but it doesn't mean we just pull them out.
When SROs were pulled from DPS in 2020, it was in part because the school board was concerned with statistics that showed the majority of students arrested or ticketed were minority students. Eaton suggested the stats are skewed because they can include officers that are not SROs that were called to a school to respond to an incident involving a student.
That officer didn't have connections to those schools. They didn't have connections with those kids. And so they were less likely to refer that issue into discipline or look at other restorative ways to handle it.
Even with SROs, they would not be involved in a pat-down search of a student with a safety plan, like at East High School on Wednesday. That would still be DPS security or staff.
So let's delve in more into depth on this very topic with Mike Eaton, who was the chief of the Department of Safety for Denver Public Schools from 2011 to 2022. And he joins me now. Good morning, Mike. Welcome back to 710 KNUS.
Hi, good morning, Jimmy. Thanks for having me.
It's good to talk with you. I appreciate you taking the time this morning. You are no longer Denver Public Schools. In fact, you're out of state, but you happen to be in Colorado for a function or something. But I appreciate you taking some time early on a Saturday morning. Now, I played a little bit of that snippet, and I want to focus first on school resource officers, but then I got some specific questions I want to get into about these pat-downs and also DPS safety officers and what your former staff did, what's really the case as far as training, so on and so forth. But let's start from this top in terms of school resource officers. Are they actually valuable methods of providing safety in schools, especially based on your experience?
So I think the short answer is yes. I understand that there were some studies done out there that, did not, indicate that having a school resource officer may have, affected the likelihood of a shooting or other violent incidents that occur in schools. But I challenge that. I challenge, how do you quantify that? How do you quantify the actual deterrent factor or prevention factor that they provide when they work in that school community on a daily basis? And they provide so much more support and make those relationships with kids that on a daily basis that I don't think we can quantify the effectiveness of that.
Talk a little bit more about that relationship piece. How does that really come into play in the bigger picture?
Well, back in 2013, shortly after I joined DPS as the chief, the superintendent tasked us with, you know, redeveloping our relationship with Denver Police and actually writing an intergovernmental agreement that talked about a partnership model that focused on student engagement, student relationships, but also defined for us and DPD what the role of the school resource officer was. And it also was the first of its kind to involve schools in the decision process for selecting SROs. And I you know, applauded Chief White and Chief Quinones back then for making all the SROs reapply for their jobs so that we could make sure that we had the right officers in the right schools. Is so important. Not every cop is suited or has the skill set to work with kids on a daily basis. And once you do that, you really do start to see a change in how that officer, you know, is now becomes part of that school community and how they're embedded in some of those practices, restorative practices, that doesn't always result in a ticket or arrest.
So one thing that I have noticed and talked with experts about is the rise in gang activity that has gone on in the past few years in Denver and the importance of school resource officers in being able to gather intel from students or from observations and what have you, and that the SROs have a direct line, Mike Eaton, into the law enforcement system because they're part of it. So you can cut through some of the hoops that, say, a DPS safety officer or an administrator might have to go through in order to get law enforcement to act on something. And especially when we're seeing more kids involved in gang activity, that to me seems like something crucial to keep in mind, setting aside the gun question.
Well, you're absolutely right, Jimmy. And I think that, you know, again, SROs are just a piece of a total security plan for a large urban school district. You know, there's 208 schools in DPS with over 90,000 kids. We relied upon, you know, a plethora of strategies and investments. One was SROs. Another was the Internal Department of Safety. Our multi-million dollar investments in, you know, integrated access control, training. You know, we continue to look at, you know, lessons learned from other violent incidents and other districts across the country that were our size, what they were implementing to, you know, mitigate some of these very high-risk behaviors that we were seeing from students.
And on this subject as well, in terms of tickets, I want to ask you about this because Tay Anderson, for example, a member of the school board, of course, vice president, has claimed that removing SROs resulted in an 81% decline in ticketing and citations among students since getting rid of SROs. Although, as I understand it, the drop in tickets is more so because the discipline matrix, I know this gets to another topic, but I wouldn't get too much into depth on it, but it's relevant here, excessively restricts when law enforcement can be called upon. For example, if you have school property destruction at any taxpayer cost, or say frequent marijuana use on campus, you don't have a referral to law enforcement generally that is even permitted. So that's more why you're seeing a drop in tickets than simply the absence of school resource officers, as I understand it.
Well, there's a couple of things, Jimmy. One is, yes, primarily the reduction in referrals to law enforcement was due to changes in the discipline policy that DPS made. And this happened when I was there. It also was, you know, I spoke with the executive director of safety and the chief of police at the time, as well as the city attorney's office, and was able to grant authority to our Department of Safety officers for handling low-level criminal offenses and actually give us the opportunity or the authorization that if we needed to write a ticket for a trespass or a, you know, marijuana use or a low-level fight, that we had that ability to do it. Because I felt that, you know, not only did because we had lost our SROs who were part of that community and trusted those processes, we needed to do something different because there were cases where law enforcement was still going to get called. So when we did get that authority to handle those low-level criminal incidents from Denver, we wrote one ticket in the entire first semester of 2021. And you know, but that was because we had to do something because of that change in policy that the board required us to undergo in 2020.
Interesting. Mike Eaton, again, our guest, longtime former chief of the Denver Public Schools Department of Safety. I want to get your reaction to a text message I just got from the president of the Douglas County School Board. He writes to me, our SROs, that would be in Doug Coast Schools in particular, are so much more than just an armed response. They are key members of our community and are often the first to identify when something is a little off with the student so they can get more care and resources. They left an incredible administrative burden off of our principals and assistant principals and are part of the awesome team consisting of law enforcement, mental health professionals, and the district. That's from Mike Peterson, president of the Doug Coast School Board.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with him. And that's where you've seen the paradigm shift over the last several years to where when you get the right officer assigned to that right campus community, good things happen for kids. And they do become way more, you know, embedded in that school community and offer so much more than just an authoritarian law enforcement presence. And that's where I really, you know, valued our IGA with Denver Police, which was actually became a national model for schools, districts like Chicago, Cleveland, and other large urban districts across the country.
Wait.
Because it was a partnership model.
So Denver in 2013 signs this intergovernmental agreement between Denver Public Schools and Denver Police Department with regard to the specifics of how school resource officers will function, what their relationship will be like, so on and so forth. And it was good enough for a lot of these massive urban cities that are even bigger than Denver to say, you know what, let's use this as our model for the SRO relationships that we have.
Absolutely.
And then they throw that out in 2020. Okay, that's
absolutely.
there you go. That's how that works. I want to ask you about the data that is, and you touched on this a bit, and you touched on it in the Nine News clip that we played, Mike Eaton. But the data that was used to put together the reports that have been used as the basis, for example, in 2020 to remove school resource officers from Denver Public Schools, you question that data a little bit. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, you know, one is that was overall, that data was overall law enforcement referrals that were made from DPS in general. You got to remember, we only had 18 SROs, you know, assigned to primarily our large comprehensive high schools. But you have 208 schools operating on a daily basis. You're going to have a law enforcement response for different levels of issues, specifically around mandatory reporting. And so, you know, you're going to get just the assigned officer that shows up, it's another call on his beat. He has no connection to the school, has no connection to the students on a daily basis. And so therefore that individual is more likely to write the ticket, make the arrest, whatever is needed so they can get on and move on. Where if you aggregated the data that was provided back in 2020 when they made this decision, you would find that the number of tickets and arrests that were made by SRO specifically were significantly lower and most likely due to mandatory referrals or because a parent wanted to press charges against the other individual. You can't in the state of Colorado just tell a victim they're not allowed to press charges because if a criminal act has occurred. And so we still had those items as well. Additionally, going back to what we just talked about, the reduction in criminal citations and arrests was primarily due to DPS change in policy, had nothing to do with
right.
SROs.
Yes, exactly. Mike Eaton, again, our guest, he's the former chief of the DPS Department of Safety, and we'll get to DPS safety officers here in a few minutes because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about the professionals that are in those positions. But a couple more questions in regards to SRO, school resource officers. I understand that there's a national organization, the National Association of School Resource Officers, that has presented training guidelines and so forth for school resource officers across the country. And in the last 10 years, they've changed how their training is done in response to so many of the concerns, including those among the folks on the DPS Board of Education, for example, among other critics of SROs. Speak a little bit about that, if you would, please.
Yeah, so the National Association of School Resource Officers, you know, has just been a great organization that provides national best practices and training for SROs across the country. And what I like about NASRO is that they now have a 40-hour basic course and also advanced course for SROs to go through that really focuses on adolescent development, how to build relationships with kids, you know, how do you, you know, look at opportunities for restorative justice practices, and not always relying upon a punitive a sanction such as a ticket or arrest. But it also talks about the importance of that SRO being embedded and part of that campus community. They have to be part of the principal's leadership team, so that they are seen as a positive member and a contributing member in a positive way for that school community, rather than that's just the cop. He's over there if anything bad happens, and he's not part of us.
Mike Eaton, I want to ask you as well specifically about instances like we have seen with the shootings at or near East High School. Yesterday in my column for the Denver Gazette, shooting makes the case for campus cops. I exclusively quote Charmaine Lindsay, who's a member of the Denver Public Schools Board of Education, and she actually said to me, quote, "I'm in favor of bringing SRO, school resource officers, back permanently on a school-by-school basis and leaving it up to the parents and the administration to jointly decide what to do." By the way, I would think most of the schools that would have the opportunity would say yes. "I think to a certain extent they provide a deterrent effect, and I think there's less of a likelihood that someone will walk into a school with a gun when an SRO is present. Especially, Mike Eaton, given the proliferation of guns in the past couple of years, weapons, different kinds of weapons on school campuses. Do you agree with that sentiment, that it's a likely deterrent to at least suggest to a student, you know what, maybe I shouldn't bring a gun to school?"
Absolutely. And not only a student, but also an outside threat, right? I mean, you know, we're dealing with, you know, individuals that either are former students or have been removed from that campus community. It provides a deterrent, you know, in several different ways. Having that, not only that visible police car out front of the school, the student body knowing that, you know, police officers are present inside the school, in conjunction and addition to the internal Department of Safety for Denver Public Schools. Absolutely. And one of the things, Jimmy, that I'd like to share with you is that the two SROs that were assigned to East High School prior to the 2020, you know, elimination, they not only were inside the school, they were outside the school. They were up on Colfax Avenue at 7-Eleven in the afternoon preventing fights from occurring and making sure that they were present in that campus community. That's the other, you know, effectiveness that our SRO program had before it was removed.
Oh, that's incredible, and just underscores the value of bringing them back permanently, by the way, as Charmaine Lindsay suggests, to DPS. Again, Mike Eaton, our guest, really appreciate your time this morning. This morning I saw an article from 9 News yesterday about Kurt Dennis, the principal of the largest middle school in DPS, McAuliffe International School, saying, "Hey, we've got a student at our school, at our middle school, who has been charged with, among other things, attempted first-degree murder. Principal Dennis has said, I've gone to the district. I've said, can we do remote learning? Can we do something to get him out of the school right now? They're already having to do daily pat-downs, which he says they are not trained to do." And this is a middle school. Very similar kind of situation to East High School, only we don't know about East and whether or not Austin Lyle was, there were requests to remove him or what might have gone on there, but we know that he was on probation for a 2021 weapons charge. But the bottom line here is that you have school staff who are conducting pat downs of students under safety plans, And they can't remove them if they might be a threat to go into online learning or something else. Speak to a little bit about, if you would please, Mike, the issue of pat downs and of students being forced from the district to stay on a campus like that, even when the principal says, hey, we got to do something here.
Well, you know, I think there's a challenge, right? I mean, I think it's actually a challenge in the system. The system is broken when it comes to having, you know, different options for students. You know, we still have a requirement to educate our students, regardless of, you know, whether or not they've committed a crime or accused of a crime. They're still, and they're still juveniles. The problem is the system has been created to where we don't have alternative programs available, even if they're in residence programs, where students like this that may be extremely violent and need to be patted down or searched on a daily basis has a place to go that is, you know, has the resources to support them. I don't believe that it's the school administrator's responsibility, nor should we expect them to be searching kids for guns on a daily basis. That's where the internal department of safety could come into play and assist them or conduct those searches on their own. And in fact, in our standards of service agreement that we created when I was there, it specifically stated that, you know, Department of Safety members should be present or conduct those, you know, searches of students when a potential weapon is involved.
So let me ask you a little bit more about the two final questions on this, this one and then one other thing, and then we'll let you go. Again, Mike Eaton, our guest, former DPS chief of safety. When it comes to pat downs, officers say, and I even confirmed this with Denver Police Department, that generally speaking, they would not even conduct, when SROs were there, conduct these pat downs. But you could at East, for example, easily have, and I would think should have had, a SRO in the room that very likely might have made a difference. Can you just talk about the role of SROs, whether in a pat down or in at least being in the room?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, SROs have to operate on under a different level of circumstances because they're sworn police officers. So they need to have probable cause and ensure that they're following those legal requirements. You know, schools and the Department of Safety, if there's a violation or a potential violation of student code of conduct, we have a lot more flexibility in our ability to search students. However, when you have an SRO assigned to that school, most of the time they are involved in some of those safety plans. And I know one of the news media outlets stated they're not, but there were many times that we had SROs and school violence detectives from DPD as part of our safety plan development because we knew they would be there and we wanted their intelligence and expertise in that process. That SRO standing there, uniformed officer, one, he has been trained or she has been trained on how to mitigate that situation immediately, and maybe there would have been a different outcome. Or also that student would have been like, there's a cop here, I'm not going to pull this gun, I'll deal with this as it goes.
Mike Eaton, our guest, final question for you. I appreciate your time. We've talked a lot about school resource officers, their training, what they do, and so forth, and clearly the value in bringing them back to DPS permanently. But there's also the safety officers themselves that are on campuses, that are at the district. There's a perception often that, oh, these are just security guards. They don't really do anything. They're just, you know, sort of there just watching people, and maybe they'll go and enforce something or what have you. But they're security guards. Are they just security guards, or is there an extensive level of training and professionalism, oftentimes maybe law enforcement, military backgrounds, what have you, that goes on with DPS safety officers, separate from the school resource officers, the law enforcement folks?
Absolutely. These are not just, you know, your security guards are watching a construction site or working at the mall. We went through a very you know, detailed process in the selection of officers, and then we had our internal training program. Our, you know, armed patrol officers go through a 5-week academy and then go through a 10 to 12 week field training program. They are trained at a law enforcement level when it comes to firearms, arrest control, driving, how to do an active shooter response. And they also cross train with Denver Police on an annual basis on how to respond to, you know, large violent incidents such as what happened at East High School last week. Our campus safety officers went through a 3 to 4 week initial academy, and those are unarmed that are assigned to middle and high schools, but we also take the time to train them not only in what we've learned on school safety, but also how to work with kids in a proactive way and be part of that school community. We have the ability to really be part of the discipline process and the restorative process that was going on in DPS. And we, by training our own officers at that level, we were able to have successful outcomes in building relationships with students and what I like to call being a positive part of their academic experience.
Yeah. Well said. Mike Eaton, we got to leave it there. Again, longtime former chief of safety for Denver Public Schools. Extremely informative, and I really appreciate your time this morning. I hope Denver Public Schools, their board, will consider the kinds of things that you were saying come June 30th, whenever there's some sort of proposal, hopefully from Superintendent Marrero, to restore, reinstate school resource officers permanently into the district, or at the very least, to give schools the chance to decide for themselves. Mike Eaton, really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Once again, former, longtime DPS Chief of Safety Mike Eaton joining us on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. We got to run to a break. We went very long in that segment. We'll be back. Texts, calls, emails, let us have it. 303-696-1971, News Talk, 710 KNUS. It's the last Saturday of Women's History Month, so this morning, all the bumper music is of some ladies of the blues, one of the blues legends, Coco Taylor, bringing us back with her awesome tune, Blues Never Dies. We continue on Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. If you want to join into the festivities, 303-696-1971 is our telephone number. You can also text into the show on the 710 KNUS app on your smartphone. Name in town if you wish to text in. An SRO may not deter school shooting, but will deter teachers from quitting because they perceive the school to be safer. Jason in Denver, by the way, thanks for your name in town in there. So, a couple of thoughts. One, may not deter. I think it likely would deter. At least when you're seeing a lot of proliferation of guns, whether it's the shooting itself or bringing firearms to campuses. And I think our discussion with Mike Eaton in the last long segment, the former chief of safety for DPS, Denver Public Schools, really helped us lay that out. But as for teachers and staff quitting, administrators, we saw two administrators shot this week by a student. That clearly was something in terms of a perception of safety that would at the very least give the perception, you would think, for especially if you're doing a pat down, you're going to have a law enforcement officer there armed, helping to deter or to act quickly. That's something to keep in mind. Another text here that came in a bit ago. Good morning, Jimmy. In my opinion, every one of those people who don't want these SROs in schools should be ashamed of themselves. We as adults are supposed to be advocates for children. They're putting politics ahead of kids' safety. They may not like guns, but if it keeps children safe, they better get over their distorted logic. I taught 39 years. If you would ask any of these children in a survey, the majority would say, yes, having a police officer in there makes me feel safer. Shame on these people. I would think, especially after what has happened in schools, they would feel like this is safer in a safer environment. Great point. Joan from Lakewood had sent several texts, and one that I think was very important. First one. So, Jimmy, there's a representative that I believe was a member of the DPS school board who is pushing a bill in the legislature, and it is House Bill 23-1169, limiting arrest for low-level offenses. Yeah, that's a bad one, and that is Jennifer Bacon. She is no longer on the DPS board, But she was on the DPS board in 2020 when they, with her vote, removed school resource officers from Denver Public Schools. And she also supported, I believe, the discipline matrix that significantly curtailed the circumstances when you could even call law enforcement to address an issue that is on campus, among other restrictions or limitations on punishment and so forth, any sort of disciplinary actions that officials at the school can do. So, yes, but here's something that's even worse. Look at what we saw in East High School. A student who was on probation for weapons charges, that student comes to school, gets a pat down, shoots two administrators. They're okay, though. They're alive. Thank God. Thank God they are alive, but they are. You couldn't charge him with murder, but theoretically, if he was still alive, Austin Lyle could have been charged with attempted murder. So in that sort of circumstance, okay, you could see that. Well, not if a bill that Jennifer Bacon is co-sponsor on would be passed. House Bill 23-1249. You probably heard George Brockler talk about it this week. He has a great column in the Denver Gazette on this very topic, which would say, so that was an instance of the high school. That would still apply for the high school student. I should be clear. That kid was 17. Even under this bill, he would still face those charges. But let's apply it to the middle school situation. Let's say the kid is 10, 11, or 12. In the middle school, at McAuliffe International School, where the principal, Kurt Davis, was sounding the alarm, we're patting down this kid just like at East. If that kid, under House Bill 1249, supported by former board member Jennifer Bacon, who removed school resource officers in 2020 and passed this disciplinary matrix in 2021 when she was on the board, if this bill were passed, and say this student, during a day when he's patted down, happens to actually have a gun on him and do exactly what Austin Lyle did, that kid would not be able to face attempted murder charges or anything. And would just have to go to meetings. And if he misses a meeting, he would go to the meeting again. He would go to the meeting again. For everyone that's missed. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. It is asinine and absurd and dangerous. Downright dangerous. So this would apply to 10 to 12-year-olds. Focusing on community-based services instead of justice involvement. Look, what happened in Virginia a couple months back or a handful of months back? A 6-year-old came to school with a gun and shot a teacher. What about a 10 to 12-year-old in Denver where you have all sorts of disciplinary issues and you have kids being patted down at middle schools? Come on now, let's be real. Let's be honest here. Gary in Denver, you're on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Good morning.
Oh, hi, Jimmy. Yesterday I was talking to a retired DA, and his understanding of what happened at East High School was the shooter slipped into the school in a door that was not locked. While in the school, the two administrators stopped him and proceeded to conduct a pat-down. They were not the usual individuals who are responsible for doing pat-downs. Secondly, he told me that when the body was found of the shooter, there wasn't a weapon, so there's some suspicion as to what were the circumstances of his death. Can you confirm or deny any of that?
I do not know the answers to that. I have not heard either of those things that you were just sharing, Gary, so I can't.
All right. It just that seemed to make more sense than the limited amount of information we've been given.
Sure. Well,
I
appreciate that, and I will also say that I'm sure we will get a lot more information on what happened here as time goes on. Thanks, Gary, for the call. Appreciated it. 303-696-1971. We got to take another break. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger. You're listening to News Talk 710 KNUS. We'll pick up the conversation on the other side. Welcome back to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Contemporary blues guitarist Samantha Fish bringing us back. Singing about how you ain't fooling me. I feel like she's singing about the Democrats at the legislature trying to fool everybody into thinking the gun control bills they want to ram through would actually have done something about any of the shooting incidents that we have seen at, in particular, East High School and Denver Public Schools. Well, on this related topic, interconnected topic, we have a surprise guest caller from the state Senate. Well, he's on his way to an event, but he is state senator in Colorado, Mark Baisley, calling in. Good morning, Mark. How are you, brother?
Good morning, Jimmy. I'm well. Of course, I'm listening to Jimmy Stangenberger while driving to that event at Douglas County. And I just get all exercised, and I got to call in and blast my uninvited opinion.
Please, because let me just say, your opinion is always invited on this program, my friend. But what is your invited opinion, uninvited opinion?
Well, so on this very topic that you've been covering and covering so well is the arrogance that comes from the other side of the aisle from me, the Democrats. It's appalling to me because they make the statement, we must do everything that we can to stop gun violence. I challenged that from the well, the podium in the front of the Senate floor a week or two ago. I said, I don't believe that you do have the humility to do everything that must be done, that you're not going to change what you're doing. So therefore, nothing is going to change. And what happened a couple of times this week at the Capitol just really got under my skin. And that is that especially yesterday, where the superintendent of Denver schools shut down the entire school district and they paraded hundreds, maybe thousands. It was an enormous crowd of East High School students that came with adults and just mobbed the Capitol, which was fine. It was really great to show up and come and express your concerns, but they had an agenda. The agenda was to find Republican legislators and tear into them. And so they had prepared questions and they were even threatening, hey, we're going to take your seat and so on. But here's the amazing thing to me. The Democrats for years and years have started out their week, the first hour of the week, meeting at the teachers union headquarters right across the street from the Capitol. They get their marching orders from the teachers union. The teachers union, the one and the Democrats that control that school district. They're the ones that decided to bring in a dangerous student from another district. They're the ones that decided to get rid of the SROs. And then when things go wrong, they come to the Democrat-controlled Senate, and the Democrat-controlled House, and the Democrat-controlled governor's office and start pointing fingers. It's all them. What they are doing is not working, and they don't have the humility to ask themselves that question, should we change what we are doing? No, they're just pouring on more and more of the same. So I'm just appalled at that and the kind of diversion of attention from those folks in charge of the school district that did things wrong, very evidently, and to get the students to come somewhere else down the street and go blame another source.
Mark Baisley, impeccable timing before the music kicks in, brother. State Senator extraordinaire. I think that's so well said. And let me just make this point that already under current law, Austin Lyle should not have had possession of or access to a firearm at 17 years old under current state law. We'll talk more about that in the next hour with State Representative Gabe Evans. Thanks, Mark. Really appreciate you calling in.
Thanks, Jimmy.
All right, we're going to take a break. Top of the hour. More continues. 303-696-1971. Stay with us.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn.
deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.